the Girl Crush Podcast.
Some theme music.
Kate Winslet micro expressions, 1800s teen angst.
She is one of the most humble people.
I love the character growth.
She's award-winning, well-known.
Yeah,
I love this.
She's 100% this character.
She has this gumption.
Off the charts.
She is amazing.
Oh, it's so classic.
Bold, valiant, daring.
So much grit.
A lot of tears. A lot of boobs.
A life lesson, you know? A life lesson from Kate Winslet.
Yes!
Hello and welcome to Girl Crush Podcast. I'm Allie.
And I'm Anne.
We love Kate Winslet, so this season we're watching all of her movies and ranking them. If you want to give us your thoughts, be sure to connect with us on Instagram at girlcrush_pod. And as always, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
On today's episode, we'll be talking about Ammonite, which was released in 2020. And in this movie, Kate plays a character named Mary Anning, and Mary's quiet life on the coast of England uncovering fossils is forever changed when an unwanted guest causes sparks. You can watch this on Hulu if you would like. And what do you think? Worth it?
I think it's worth it. Yeah. What about you?
I agree. I think this is a watch.
Definitely a watch. So if you haven't seen it, now is the time to pause and go do so. Otherwise, from here on out, there will be spoilers.
So jumping into the plot of Ammonite, we gave this an 8.25 out of 10. And this was a score that we were a little bit split on. So Allie said 7.5 to 8 range, and I said around 8.5. So we kind of landed in the middle at 8.25, and it worked out.
It did.
Yeah. So the movie opens with men displaying a fossil discovered by Mary Anning, who is played by Kate Winslet. And Mary lives in what looks to be a freezing cold seaside town in 1840s England with her aging mother, and she searches the beach and cliffs for interesting rocks or presumably other fossils. And she finds a fossil in a like giant seaside cliff rock. I don't even know how she knows to look there. It all looks the same to me.
Right. Have you ever gone fossil hunting?
No. And, you know, I like see these stories, I guess not often in the news, but online about like kids who find dinosaur fossils in their backyard or these people who find these amazing things. And I don't think I would even realize. Like, I think I could be digging a hole in the ground and like dig up a piece of a dinosaur and I wouldn't know, you know? I would have no idea.
That's so funny.
Have you?
Yeah, we went on a field trip once, probably in second or third grade, to some park, I don't know, some like conservation area. And we like dug up rocks and stuff. And the goal was to try and find a fossil. And someone found a fossil of like, it was like a shell or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not that exciting. But at the time, we thought it was amazing.
Yeah, history. Mary works on cleaning off the fossil. And just for context, we are 9 minutes into the movie, and it has been completely silent until now.
Yes.
She speaks for the first time, and a man named Roderick Murchison and his wife, Charlotte, played by Saoirse Ronan, come into Mary's, like, workroom area, and they introduce themselves and admire her watching her work. She, however, is a bit unimpressed or kind of put off by this guy Roderick and his wife showing up. He wants to buy the ammonite, which was the fossil she had found that morning, from her, but he also asks for a chance to work alongside her on the seaside and learn from her. So she's kind of well known for what she does.
Mm-hmm.
She really wants to refuse. She's clearly an introvert, but he's offering some much needed money, so she begrudgingly agrees.
And by the way, ammonites are extinct marine mollusk animals, as we researched for once.
Did a Google.
Look at us go.
Roderick joins Mary on the beach the next day. She's had a head start on him and does not go out of her way to tell him what she's doing. He picks up some rocks and she helps identify them. Most of them are nothing, which is what my experience would be. But one has some fossilized feces in it. So
just what you want.
Big day on the beach, you know?
By the way, Roderick is wearing slacks, knee-high boots, a blazer, a scarf, and a top hat. Like, they're doing physical manual labor, lifting rocks, digging, and that's what he's wearing.
Also, it's so windy. How does a top hat stay on the head?
Yes. This is not the time or place.
It is not. It's an inappropriate top hat situation. Roderick gets back to his room to find Charlotte just laying in bed, looking very sad. He says he's taking her out, and so they go for a walk, and he talks about her needing to recover from some sort of depression or mourning of some kind. She's wearing a lot of black, and so we can kind of surmise that something, you know, not good happened. He says he wants his bright, clever, funny wife back. When Roderick pays for the ammonite fossil, he tells Mary that his wife will be staying here to, quote, take in the sea air, which, I mean, is a great prescription, honestly.
Yeah.
For her melancholia while he is traveling, and asks if Mary would be open to Charlotte joining her on the sea fossil expeditions as well, so that Charlotte's not alone while he's gone for 4 to 6 weeks, roughly.
No big deal. Also, this town, I know it's by the sea. Sea air is great, but it's so dreary. I cannot imagine that this would help with a depressive state. Like, it is clearly cold. It's just doesn't look like what I would imagine if I were in a really sad state where I'd want to go, you know?
Agreed.
Like, where would you recommend as a place to go to cheer a friend up?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of different vibes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess if you want, like, a lively atmosphere, probably, like, Southern California. Or if you're looking for, like, solitude and peace, probably somewhere here in the Rocky Mountains.
That's what came to my mind first. Rocky Mountains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful spot.
Beautiful spot, like being in mountains, nature, seeing something bigger than you. I feel like, I don't know, there's something special about that.
Yeah. I love the sound in the forest of wind moving through the trees, like a gentle breeze. Like, it's so calming. I think that's like one of the most calming sounds.
Oh, so nice. Kale, insert sound effect.
Charlotte is forced to go meet Mary, who just silently hands her a pair of boots and walks to the sea. They don't really talk throughout the day. Seems to suit both of them. Charlotte refuses the lunch that Mary offers her.
Mary, by the way, has some sort of like old-style looking calzone for lunch, like a handheld meat pie of sorts.
Oh my God, I have to tell you a story. Okay, so a few years ago, Scott and I went to... I can't believe I'm going to say the city's name again, but Scott and I went to New Orleans, which has now come up in our past 3 episodes. But Scott and I went to a wedding in New Orleans, and it was like a very small wedding, like 30 people maybe were there. Uh-huh. It was super cool. It was like in this old carriage house on Bourbon Street, like amazing place.
That's amazing.
They had these like appetizers or snacks or like part of dinner. Honestly, I don't really know what portion of the meal it was meant to be for, but they were these meat pies that were like a handheld old-fashioned meat pie. And I swear to you, Allie, it was like one of the best things I've ever eaten. And we're like having some beverages, you know, on Bourbon Street as part of this wedding. And I was like, Scott, I think I'm going to take some of those meat pies and like bring them with us. Like... Like, they were so good. They were so good. I have no idea what was in them.
Wow.
Couldn't even describe it to you, actually, if I really wanted to.
Really?
It was savory, but otherwise, it was just good, you know?
Yeah. Wow. For some reason, like, I think the term meat pie sounds terrible.
Oh,
I don't
it's very
want
off-putting.
It.
It's a terrible
name. It's so
name.
Off-putting. But if you tell me calzone, like, I'm in. There's this place, if you ever go to St. Louis, there's this place called Sauce on the Side. They have like a million calzones and they have a million different kinds of dipping sauces, and it's so good. So recommend for anyone going to St. Louis.
Sounds amazing. But all this to say, I think, though the name is terrible, meat pies are good.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I just don't like the name.
Fair enough. Shouldn't be called that.
I agree.
But, you know, like, then I'm thinking, like, Hot Pocket, and then I'm like, well, Meat Pocket is worse, you know?
Oh, you're right.
That's way worse.
I think it should just be a fanciful name. Like, calzone. Like, I don't know where that word came from. Like, just make up a new word for it.
I'm sure it's Italian, but I don't know. anything else. Call it anything else.
Yeah.
Like I said, Mary seems fine with Charlotte's silence, doesn't try to force her to talk or do anything. Charlotte shows some interest when Mary notices something in the cliffside, but Mary very bluntly tells Charlotte to not tell her how to conduct her business, and when Charlotte is defensive about what she's even doing at the seaside in the first place, Mary tells her to essentially go take a hike. She's like, go swim in the ocean, leave me alone, and by the way, your husband left and is paying me to hang out with you. Like,
ouch. Mary is like very no nonsense. She's not like overly warm. She just wants to do her job and be right. left alone.
And be alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Charlotte puts on what we can only call a bathing dress, and it is ankle length, complete with a bonnet, and gets immediately knocked over in what looks to be a very, very cold sea.
Just looks miserable. Here we are back at the ocean, and I realize how picky I am when it comes to being in the ocean. I would not go in at this point.
It's clearly freezing outside.
It's insane. It's an insane thing to do. Also, like having a bathing dress, the dress would just be like flowing around your ankles and touching you. And I'd be like, is that a fish or is that my bathing dress?
And then you come out and it's just like wearing wet jeans, you know, like the whole thing is just stuck to you.
It'd be so heavy.
Yeah. And then the wind. Oh,
no way.
Well, looky what happens the next day. Charlotte arrives to Mary's shop and just collapses because she has caught a chill. So Mary calls for a doctor. He says she has a fever and basically needs care around the clock. Doc gives Mary instructions, and she seems to have no choice but to care for her since Roderick just, you know, scampered off.
Right. Also, can you imagine having a fever in the 1800s? Like, we're constantly reminded how terrible that is.
Yeah, I don't really get fevers very often, but just being sick in general, like, nothing to help you.
No, I literally have COVID right now. And I cannot imagine having it in the 1800s or having a fever and just that potentially being it.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, yeah. Just whole place. Everything's just damp and cold. However, we see Mary go to this beautifully green garden. Birds are chirping. The sun is shining. And I'm like, where the heck are you?
Yeah.
She asks to buy a salve from a woman who asks if it's for her mother again. And the woman she buys from seems to know her well, asks about her mother, says she hasn't seen her in church lately. And she tries to give it to her, this like medicine for free and invite her in, but Mary's pride seems to keep her from it. She refuses charity.
You have to wonder when we get to the scene where it's very clearly different from the other scenes we've seen. It's prettier, it's brighter, there's actually colors and life in the garden. And you have to wonder if it's a strategic change in scenery or symbolic in some way, showing how dreary Mary's life is compared to other people in society.
Right. Like, is this in her town and we're just seeing how dark her life is, even though there really is life and color and,
right,
you know, like vibrancy around her. And we're just kind of seeing her perspective with the frankly miserable atmosphere otherwise.
Yeah.
Mary cares for Charlotte, applies the salve, and continues to sit by her bedside. Maybe out of boredom, she sketches Charlotte, who finally wakes up for the first time since falling ill. The doctor comes back to see her and compliments Mary's care for her. Charlotte gets out of bed and gets dressed in one of Mary's dresses, and this is the first time we've seen Charlotte not dressed in mourning clothes. And Charlotte explores the house. She asks Mary if they can go back out onto the beach that day. And Charlotte touches Mary's shoulder as she leaves the room. And then Mary has this kind of stark moment of silence as though, like, any other contact with another person is very rare for her. We have not seen her touch another human being in this whole movie, including her mother.
Right. Also an interesting moment here. Mary turns the question back on her and asks Charlotte if she thinks she's strong enough to go out to the beach that day. And Charlotte kind of stops, and it seems like she's not often asked her own opinion, even concerning herself. And we saw that earlier. At one point, her husband, Roderick, had ordered her food without even asking her, you know, what she wanted. So it seemed like this kind of opened her eyes to, oh, I can have an original thought of my own.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever want Kale to just pick out your food for you?
No. I want him to. I never have understood that concept. No, I want him to pick out the restaurant.
There you go.
Or I want him to pick out what we should have for dinner and I'll go make it. But like if we're at a restaurant, I get very excited about choosing the food. What about you?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had someone do that. And I agree with you. I would prefer Scott to choose where we go or choose what we make. But I think I would be offended if we sat down and he's like, you're going to get this.
I would totally be offended. Yeah.
I think if I asked, if I was like, I have reached my decision-making capacity for the day and I would prefer for you to pick something, like, that's fine. But
Yeah. Or like if we're getting appetizers, then maybe I would like, you just pick something because mm-hmm. I don't feel like it or I can't decide.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he surprises you and he's like, oh, we'll have, and he chooses an appetizer and maybe you don't normally get an appetizer, yeah. then that's a bonus. Great. But like, what if I really, really wanted a certain dish and he just ordered something different?
Yeah. And inevitably, I usually order the better thing. So if he's ordering for both of us.
No, that's not good.
Well, then it's not good. That day on the beach, they sit closer together. The first time they'd sat very far apart. And they kind of keep looking at each other. And it seems like Mary and Charlotte are trying to figure each other out. Charlotte offers to help as Mary prepares dinner, but it is very clear she's never done this before. Charlotte and Roderick seem wealthier, so they likely have cooks or maids or whatever. And instead, Mary kind of redirects her to go get coal outside, which turns out it's also a new activity for Charlotte. And she manages to tumble into this pile of coal. She comes inside filthy, and she starts kind of giggling, but it turns into these, like, desperate sobs. Like, she's just a helpless person.
Right.
And Mary comforts her. That night, Mary's working on tourist stuff, gluing shells to a frame. So I guess this goes back centuries. You know, kitschy souvenir items.
Kitschy beach souvenirs.
Yeah. And Charlotte asks to try, and Mary teaches her. Charlotte tells Mary she looks tired, and Mary's like, I always look tired.
Thanks.
It's like when you don't wear makeup and people are like, are you okay? Man. And it's like, this is just my face, Bob, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Don't comment on it ever. Charlotte remarks that Mary's taking care of her as if she were her child. And she's like, do you not have any kids? And Mary tells her that her mom had 10 children. 8 of them died, each taking a piece of her mother with them. And she says she doesn't need children because she has her work. So clearly mm-hmm. she's been shaped by this grief. She lives with her mother now.
Right.
And it's, you know, I imagine that that would really impact you. Mary's been sleeping next to Charlotte, sitting up in a chair because Charlotte's in Mary's bed. And Charlotte tells her she's taken her bed for too long and offers to share it, but it's like a twin bed.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Although, I will say, I am so abnormal. I don't feel the need to have, like, a king-size bed. Have we talked about this before?
We have.
On the pod? Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
You love a king.
I love it. Because I just, you know, spread out.
Oh, but a twin is too small.
Twin is really small.
Yeah.
It's really small. Charlotte, trying to help around the house, starts polishing these figurines that Mary's mother polishes daily, but she gets really annoyed and takes them from her, saying they're her babies. So these are, like, symbolic of her children who have died, and she cares for them every day.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor comes back and invites Mary to a, quote, musical evening. He's clearly trying to ask her on a date, but Mary's like, where's Charlotte's invite? And he stumbles through his words saying he thought because she was recently ill, she shouldn't go. And Mary's like, well, I'll go, but only if Charlotte goes. And so the doctor's like, okay.
Not what he was going for.
Not what he was going for. The women get ready for the evening, and we see some potential romantic tension between them at this point. Mm-hmm. Charlotte offers Mary some of her perfume, and then, like, Mary sees her all dressed up for the evening, and she smiles, which we don't see very much from her.
Right.
And as they're leaving for the event, Charlotte grabs Mary's hand, and Mary looks, like, kind of taken aback. Again, she's not a touchy person,
right.
You know? At the event, Mary looks out of place. This is clearly not her scene. Her dress is not at the same level of fanciness as the other women. And the doctor tries to introduce her to people, but she just makes an excuse for the restroom to go outside and smoke and avoid everyone. When everyone goes to take their seats, Mary is already sitting in the back, but she sees Charlotte go sit up front, talking to and smiling with and just, like, socializing with all these other women and kind of, like, people of the society.
Mm-hmm.
Mary watches for a while, but she seems very overwhelmed by this whole situation, so she gets up and leaves, walks home alone. And when Charlotte gets back, she says, "You left me." And Mary is writing in her journal. Charlotte insists on seeing it, and it seems to be a poem about being alone. Charlotte tells Mary that she was the most fascinating and beautiful person there tonight, and then holds her hand. And I'm like, who knew hand-holding could be so sensual?
Right?
Mary withdraws her hand and looks away. So we're like, okay,
What's happening?
What's happening? They go to the beach again, and it's so interesting how the cinematography is, like we said earlier, with the light and the color, because the scenery now looks a little bit brighter than it did before in the same setting. Charlotte points out a rock that has slid down the cliff a bit that Mary had been interested in before but seemed too large to do anything about. But now Charlotte hoists up her skirt. She starts excavating this rock, and they work on it together, tying it to this board so they can transport it. So it's just like a little more pep in the step in general. Yeah. They get it back, and Mary tells Charlotte about what's being uncovered in the rock and tells the story about the fossil we saw at the very beginning, which was like that fossil that was in the museum that the men were displaying. And Mary had found that when she was just 11 years old, and it had paid for years of food and clothing. Therefore, she couldn't have kept it, even though it was like the highlight of anything she'd ever found. It obviously has shaped her entire life and purpose. Just interesting that it was so valuable.
Yeah.
They say goodnight, and Charlotte kisses her on the cheek. And then they just start making out. They're both unsure, but kind of motivated. And then things get steamy for them, I have to say.
Hot and heavy.
Hot and heavy. And 1840s, like, they're a little like,
they have like a hesitant start, but then they're all in.
Yes, yes. The next day, just to bring us back down to earth, we see Mary's mom cough up some blood, and she's been coughing this whole movie, but it is relevant, so just, you know, tuck that away. Yeah. Mary and Charlotte sit on the beach eating hard-boiled eggs, which is not really a classic beach food. A lot of potential for sand, in my opinion. Getting on it, gritty.
Ooh, yeah.
You know? But this is the sunniest day we've seen so far. So again, like, is life coming back to Mary's world because of this? Mary just takes off part of her dress and goes into the ocean in what we can only imagine would be pretty promiscuous bathing suit, given it's mid-thigh versus ankle length, and she has no bonnet on.
Scandalous.
Scandal.
Okay, if not hard-boiled eggs, what are you bringing to a beach picnic?
Some fried chicken and potato salad.
Potato salad's where it's at, yep.
What about you?
So good. I was going to say chicken salad sandwiches.
Also good.
But then you said potato salad, so something like that. Let's see. Probably a fruit and veggie tray. Love that on a hot day.
We love that. So refreshing. Charlotte joins her, and they make out again in the ocean, going deeper into the ocean, a metaphor, perhaps. And they both just seem genuinely happy, both of them, for like maybe the first time in this whole movie. They've both been so depressed and sad, and they're like finding joy and finding themselves again.
Right. And we saw Mary give that soft smile, but this is the first time where we've seen her, like, truly smile, like a big smile.
Yeah. Mary's trying to sell her latest fossil for 22 pounds. And a man who's looking at it remarks that the price seems high, but she says she doesn't want to haggle and asks what price he thinks is fair. Charlotte comes in and makes a very compelling case for why it's worth the 22 pounds, with all the hard work that went into it and how much importance the scientific community places on such findings, and the man agrees to pay full price. And you know I always have to look up currency rates. And
yes, what is it?
So 22 pounds in 1840 is about $2,200 today.
Ooh.
So quite a chunk of change.
Go Charlotte.
Charlotte receives a letter from Roderick, her husband, presumably telling Charlotte that her time is about up at the seaside. Charlotte and Mary are both very upset by this, and they have a passionate night together in one of the more graphic or maybe just longer love scenes we've seen in any of Kate's movies.
It is a long one, I think, for like most movies I've seen.
Several minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Charlotte packs her trunk the next day, and as she's about to get in the carriage, the only thing Mary can bring herself to comment on is the freaking weather. Come on, Mary.
Ugh.
She watches as the carriage wheels away and then just slowly goes home. Mary's mom is looking real rough. She has a ritual of cleaning those little figurines, and she's disappointed that Mary wasn't there to help her today. She wants to sell the mirror that Charlotte had decorated, but Mary refuses. And then all of a sudden, Mary's mom just walks into the other room and collapses and passes away. Mary dresses her and the doctor and another man, maybe a coroner, come. The salve lady, who had the, like, nice garden, comes over and pays respects. She asks if she's heard from, quote, your Mrs. Murchison lately, and talks nicely about Charlotte, saying it pleases her they struck up a friendship. And the lady apologizes for hurting her. So we're like, okay, is this perhaps an old flame of Mary's? Because she seems like she knows what's going on.
Right.
And she says she wasn't sure if she could live up to her or her expectations of her.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary says she tried, and the salve lady says she doesn't think she did. She says she thinks Mrs. Murchison, Charlotte, unlocked something in Mary that she couldn't. So, it's love, moral of the story. Mary gets a letter, presumably from Charlotte. She immediately writes back, and she leaves for a dock, and we watch her run to it for probably a full minute of the movie. She gets on a sailboat.
It's also like a shuffle run, which I can appreciate, by the way.
Yeah. She's got a lot of skirts, too, you know? She's like...
Right.
She arrives in London to visit Charlotte, seemingly invited from the letter she received because the maid who opens the door was expecting her.
Also, literally in our notes, there is a picture because... You stopped to take a photo of something in the movie. Please describe.
They're the largest doors I've ever seen in my life. They're like 12 feet tall.
They are huge. They do make them look like little dolls or something. Like, you're like, what is happening?
They're so big. We'll have to post it.
When I first opened these notes, that image was pasted in here and it took up a whole page. And I was like, what is this?
Oh, man. Charlotte's house, as expected, is super nice. As Mary's waiting for her, she peruses the living room and sees that there's a cabinet of fossils from Mary's shop. Charlotte runs into the room to greet Mary and kisses her. Mary seems taken aback because the maid is there, and Charlotte's like, oh, it's just the maid. Charlotte is full of energy and can't wait to show Mary something, and it's a bedroom for Mary to move into. She has planned everything out, including having gowns made for her, and she eagerly tells her that her own room is right next to hers, so they'll always be right next to each other.
Ooh, have to say, I appreciate Charlotte's effort here, but can imagine this is a lot for Mary, who we know is, like, very much set in her ways.
Right, such an introvert, right. Doesn't really care about, like, frivolous stuff.
Yes. And also have to wonder, like, what is she going to do about her husband? Like, she doesn't address that part of it yet.
Right. Mary, as expected, is quiet, seems very taken aback. She says she feels she's at a great disadvantage. She feels misled and hoodwinked, like Charlotte has kind of lured her here under false pretenses, maybe, because she thought she was just coming for a visit, and it feels like Charlotte just wants to fit Mary into her life perfectly, caged in a glass display case like her fossils. And Mary's like, what about my own home and my work? And says Charlotte just doesn't understand her.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte responds by kissing her, and Mary's like, no, that's not an answer. She says her proposition makes her feel like a bird in a gilded cage and says she needs to go find lodging for the night. So Charlotte's pushed her a little too far.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems like if she can't live in a free way that fits into her life or a life that they would create together, she doesn't seem to want it, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's worth it for her to give up her home and her job to secretly be with Charlotte, staying in a room next door and fitting into her high-class life.
Yeah. And it does seem like she truly loves her work. And of course, like, if she's in London, she's not by the ocean, right, which is where she finds those things. But it also seems like she's just resigned to things not working out for her ever.
So maybe she's not even willing to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary goes to the British Museum to see her fossil from when she was 11 years old. Charlotte follows her, and they just stare at each other over the fossil, seeming a world apart and separated by Mary's work. Very metaphorical.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how it ends. We don't know if they end up together. We don't know.
Mm. So what do you like about it? We both liked this movie. You wanted to rate it even higher. So tell me some of the things.
Oh, man. I honestly really like how little dialogue there is in this movie.
Mm.
It is so visual. I mean, we noted some of the lighting and things like that, but so much is communicated with body language and facials, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it was very artistic in a way that isn't, you know, when some movies are very artistic and independent and you kind of roll your eyes at them because they're trying so hard. This didn't feel that way to me. It did feel very artistic, but it just felt like it was well done too, the way that they used all of the tools that they had at their disposal.
Mm-hmm. And because of that low dialogue, I feel like a lot of times it could feel super slow. Like I'd be checking my watch, like how much is left. But it actually sets the pace and tone for the movie, and we get so much more from that sense of melancholy that the characters feel because of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like sitting in your feels, you know?
Yes, like it's purposefully slow.
Yes. So it was engaging.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people agreed with us. This has an 85% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 69% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. So very well received overall.
What else did you like about it?
I really like the way that they portrayed their characters. I think sometimes LGBTQ+ characters in movies can be tropey, or they just kind of are used to fit this comedic role or something like that. And mm-hmm. I don't think this movie did that. I don't think I'd ever seen a period piece that had this aspect where someone who was LGBTQ+ was a main character and not just, you know, something considered weird in society on the side or something like that. So I appreciated that viewpoint of it. I thought it was super interesting.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And I liked even that they gave her continued history with another woman in town. Like,
yeah, yeah. Like it wasn't just a one-off.
Right. And she wasn't necessarily hiding it either.
Right.
You know, interestingly, Mary Anning was a real person. And there was no public indication that she was gay, but there was also no indication that she wasn't. She had never been in a heterosexual relationship. She'd never been married. And the director, Francis Lee, defended his decision, saying in a series of tweets, quote, "After seeing queer history be routinely straightened throughout culture and given a historical figure where there is no evidence whatsoever of a heterosexual relationship, is it not permissible to view that person within another context?"
Interesting.
I'm like, I love that perspective.
Was there anything you disliked about it?
You know, they're like, 10 kids, 8 died, we have Mary, who's the other one?
So true. We never get to see that.
We never know. There's another sibling.
And you're like, why would they say 8 and then never tell us anything about them? You're so right.
Right. Yeah. Just get rid of the other one. What about you?
I didn't really have any real dislikes. I agree that it was slow, so I would have to be in a certain mood to watch this. But it did not take away from my first time watch. We'll get to my thoughts on how that affects the rewatchability in a later category.
Okay. All right.
Spoiler. So for Kate's character, Mary, we rated her an 8 out of 10. We talked a lot about her character. I feel like at the beginning, she's quiet, doesn't seem to have a desire to connect with others. She's brash at first. But we start to see a little bit more from her throughout the movie, which I think is interesting. She has these moments of wittiness or sarcasm. She says at one point to Charlotte, "I might have preferred you when you were unconscious." And I also like that she gives some insight into this life that she has. So she's in this solitary career. She has no children, which she says is because of watching her mother go through losing so many children, but also we get the sense she's not just going to marry a man just to fit in and be able to have kids.
Yeah. I love how complex this character is. There is so much to her, and there's definitely a lot we don't see, but it's in a way that adds a nice mystery to her versus mm-hmm. the character feeling underdeveloped. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we get so much from observing her other relationships and her acting that I felt like I got enough from her while still wanting more. So like,
yeah, so true.
She clearly is looking to love and be loved, but she is so guarded and just cannot let herself take anyone's kindness without it feeling transactional or like charity. And we see this continuously, like with the doctor, with Charlotte, with the salve woman. Just over and over again.
Yeah.
Where people are trying to extend kindness to her or love, and she just like desperately wants it but can't take it.
True. I also just love what she does for a living. I mean, talk about a boss babe in the 1800s excavating fossils.
Right.
I do wish we knew more about how she got into that profession. At one point, she mentions her dad's tools. So maybe she took after him. We also know she found that fossil when she was 11. So then I'm like, did she just happen upon that fossil?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what launched her into this career or what? But I would love to know more.
Yeah. I can't decide how much growth we actually see from Mary. Like, I think she knows who she is and she's kind of resigned herself to how her life will be. And maybe the whole situation with Charlotte just solidifies that she's okay with her life as is because she sees the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she doesn't want to live in hiding in Charlotte's house with Charlotte still married to her husband. She'd rather live as her true self in her house doing her job, even if that means being alone.
Yeah.
But if Charlotte had left her husband and came back to the seaside to live with her, she probably would have accepted that.
Yeah.
Maybe?
I think she would have.
I like to think she would have.
Yeah, me too. That makes me think she's like very true to herself and convicted in mm-hmm. what she wants from her life.
Yeah.
She's not so desperate for love that she's willing to give it all up and live in hiding. I just think that's an interesting character trait of hers.
Yeah. She's like just not really willing to compromise. And maybe some of that's to her demise, but maybe some of it is also a strength.
Yeah, I think it creates hardship for her, but also she doesn't know how to be any other way. And she probably wouldn't be happy if she wasn't that way either.
Right. Yeah.
Hmm.
Wow, what a good character. We talked so long about it.
We did. I know. That never happens. Yeah, so interesting.
So for Kate's acting, we gave her a 9 out of 10. We were like kind of in like anywhere from the 8.5 to 9.5 range. And the only thing that kind of kept us from going higher than a 9 was while she was very controlled and very amazing in her character, she didn't have a super wide range of emotions like she does in other movies. But she portrayed this character so well.
Yeah, we had to award it a 9. But we couldn't go further than that without seeing a little bit more emotion.
Right.
Not that it required it. She did it so well. One thing that she does really well is you mentioned that she doesn't speak until like 9 minutes into the movie. But we see her in those first 9 minutes. And she seems to express so much about her character. Like, you kind of get to know her before she's even started speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a testament to the way the movie is made, but also how Kate is acting and how she is portraying that character in her body movements and facials and things like that.
Yeah, like we said before, because there's so little dialogue in this, this movie is very, very heavily dependent on the facials and the body language. And Kate Winslet is so good at that. I mean, I think that's something consistently that we say about her acting is her facial acting is so strong.
Oh, yeah.
And even just like her posture in this movie is so in tune with who this character is. So like just all throughout, her facials are so good. This is such a subdued character. So I think it would be easy to think like, well, that doesn't take much skill. You just like have RBF the whole time or whatever. But the fact that I felt like I could read her thoughts via her expressions, you know, like Kate's micro expressions, as it says in our intro for this season, they are on full display here.
They are. I also think it would be so hard to bear it all. We've talked about her when she's done her other nude scenes or sex scenes. I mean, this is a close up and a long sex scene, as we talked about. But Kate is known for her willingness to perform nude scenes, though she does always want it to contribute to the story. She doesn't want it to just be, you know, for show.
Mm-hmm.
But she said that she thinks it can contribute to body positivity to see women nude in film, which I think is an interesting take on it, especially when it's done in a way that advances the story and is not just some, you know, something there for male pleasure or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's this movie that came out in 2022 called Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, either one. But it's Emma Thompson, and she is this female character who hires this escort, essentially. And the whole movie takes place, like, in her hotel room. But it's just this, like, story of her, like, coming to terms with her aging body, essentially. It's very, like, body positivity. And it's a really amazing movie. It was not what I expected going into it, but
that's so interesting.
It's really good. And I think there's been like Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson, we've seen them together in Sense and Sensibility, and we know that like they are big advocates for aging gracefully and like
naturally,
natural beauty and things like that. So
love that.
Emma Thompson, shout out. It was a huge snub that neither Kate nor Saoirse were nominated for any big awards. I feel like this movie made such a splash when it came out that it got a lot of Oscar buzz, and there was nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, there was Kate and Saoirse won a Women's Film Critics Circle Award for Best On-Screen Couple, and it was nominated for a few other regional type awards, but
not the big ones.
Not the big ones, and I'm really surprised by that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So for our bonus category, Feisty, we gave her a 1 out of 2 in this. we got to give her some points due to the profession she's chosen. It's the 1800s, her decision to remain true to herself. But she's pretty subdued, and it's a different type of feistiness than we typically rate. So I think that's why we didn't give it more than a 1.
Yeah, I think I would call her stubborn, but not necessarily feisty. But she does have guts.
Oh, yeah.
And then for our Would You Watch Again score, we usually give this a 1 if neither of us would watch it again, a 5 if both of us would, or a 3 if we're uncertain or kind of in the middle. And for this one, we gave Ammonite a 3 out of 5. I think I would watch this again. I think you need to be in a certain mood for it, but it is really beautifully told, dreary love story, and I think it deserves a rewatch or two.
Nice. I'm glad I watched it once, but as I kind of alluded to earlier, I think the slowness of it, again, for the first time watch was not bad. It was intentional, it was artistic, but would make it not a rewatch for me, just because usually I'm not rewatching those sorts of movies anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so to review for Ammonite, we gave the plot an 8.25 out of 10, Kate's character Mary an 8 out of 10, her acting a 9 out of 10, a feisty score of 1 out of 2, and a Would You Watch Again score of a 3 out of 5, bringing this to a total of 29.25 out of 37 points, meaning that Ammonite has broken into the top 10 and is ranked number 6 of every Kate Winslet movie.
Yes, it is.
Number six.
The acting score was superb.
So good.
I'm laughing in our notes because this was one of the earlier movies that we watched for the season, and we were still, like, playing around with the bonus category name. So in these notes, it says ballsy.
Yes. Which I can't remember if we said that in, like, our first episode, that we were really torn with how to name that category.
I think we have said at some point that we were like, we didn't know what to call this.
Yeah. Because I still like the concept of ballsy, but it's just not right for Girl Crush.
It's really not. It doesn't fit.
There's not a good female equivalent word, which is unfair in and of itself, by the way.
Agreed.
Like, let's make one.
Yeah, but we don't know what it is.
No. So if anyone has any good ideas for that.
Also, I'm laughing because you put the door picture at the bottom of my snow. It's so crazy. It's so tall.
We'll put it on social media.
It's so big.
It's outrageously large.
It's big. I don't think it's 12 feet. I think I was off on that. But I think it's at least 10 feet. Anyway. No one can see what we're looking at. But you can if you go on Instagram at girlcrush_pod. This week, when it comes out, you'll see it.
Do it.
As always, thanks for listening to Girl Crush Podcast. Let us know your thoughts on today's movie. You can find us on Instagram, again, at girlcrush_pod, or on TikTok at girlcrushpod. You can also visit our website at girlcrushpodcast.com or support us at buymeacoffee.com/girlcrushpod. Tune in next time when we'll be talking about a super weird movie.
Super weird.
I know last week we said Quills was maybe her weirdest movie, but I actually think it's Holy Smoke, which is what we're talking about next week.
Yep. You guys are in for it.
Oh, boy. Bye.
Bye.